Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. White privilege, male privilege, black privilege, financial privilege. Check your privilege. Your privilege is showing. You get the picture. The word privilege is increasingly thrown around like a hot potato, and that might not be the best approach to fighting privilege. My next guest says privilege is best understood not as a real trait, but as a construction. Anyone can be privileged if it suits someone else's arguments. That's from author Phoebe Maltz-Bovey's latest book, The Perils of, quote, privilege, why injustice can't be solved by accusing others of advantage. She joins me now to make her case. Phoebe, welcome to WNYC.
Thanks, Brian.
Why is the word privilege in the title of the book in quotes?
Ah, I'm glad you began with that question. So some people see this and think, oh dear, here's a book from somebody who thinks that all the different bigotries are actually a fiction. That's not why it's in quotes. The word privilege is in quotes to make it clear that it's a book about the idea of privilege, the use of the term privilege to talk about inequality. And if privilege, the word, were not in quotes, it would seem to be a book about the dangers of being very rich. And I don't think it's dangerous to be very rich.
And you actually argue that using the word privilege, as in check your privilege and your privilege is showing, and making that an organizing principle, actually advantages the people who are already privileged.
Yes.
Why?
So I think that what happens is that as a description, privilege makes sense. Society isn't fair, and people who have unearned advantages are frequently very oblivious to this. I think what happens is that acknowledging privilege and having conversations about your own privilege, somebody else's privilege that's about the same as yours, that becomes sort of, it takes on a life of its own and serves other functions and pretty much allows people who have unearned advantages to evade trying to do anything about them.
Why think that, though? I mean, as somebody who is a white male, it has certainly helped me, attain political awareness over the years by thinking in terms of both male privilege and white privilege in society. And when you start thinking in those terms, then you start seeing it everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if you don't have the concept in your brain, then your own privilege or someone else's privilege, but mostly your own privilege, because that's who has to become aware of privilege, is people who have privilege, I think. And so once you have that concept, it helps you see the ways in which you're privileged. And why doesn't that help the cause of fighting inequality?
Well, so I think a couple things there. First is that I think there's nothing wrong with being aware of your own unearned advantages. I think that's great. I think if you are aware of how society is unfair and of just sort of in general demographic terms who you are, that hopefully will fall into place. I think the problem is that it doesn't necessarily follow that if you're aware of your privileges, you want to get rid of them. Some people might, you know, a different person might think, I'm a white man and isn't that fabulous and I want to hang on to those privileges. So I don't think it necessarily follows. Does every rich person who realizes they're rich want to not be rich? Obviously not.
Listeners, you want to call in and talk to our guest, Phoebe Maltz-Bovey, about the perils of, quote, privilege, why injustice can't be solved by accusing others of advantage, and your own take and your questions for her, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. One specific case study you cite as sort of a cautionary tale is of Princeton freshman Tal Fortgang. He became kind of the poster child for privilege checking gone wrong in 2014 after he wrote an article called Checking My Privilege, Character as the Basis of Privilege. What happened?
Oh, so a lot of different things happened in that story. So the sort of overarching one is that it was sort of the beginning of a new era in journalism of really using college students' writing as content, because college students who write op-eds frequently, and I was one myself once, write things that are a little less polished and careful than what professional or slightly older writers will do. But what happened there was...
People with editors.
Exactly. What happened there was a Princeton freshman, I believe, wrote that in a college op-ed that then got picked up by a major publication, he wrote that his classmates at Princeton were accusing him of white privilege. And then he wrote that because his family, I should say like my own family, is Jewish and had faced oppression in Europe, that basically he didn't have white privilege in the U.S. Or it was a little bit muddled because it was, understandably, as my own college writing certainly was, it was a college essay. The internet went crazy and every single person online pointed out that this guy's privilege was showing and that he should check his privilege. So the thing he was complaining about just happened that much more. But I think he's doing fine. He seems to still be writing on the topic.
And so what were the consequences of that that play into your theory?
What happened there, I think...
Maybe one could argue, well, this started a conversation. And I don't know what he wrote.
Okay.
But
yeah.
Whatever it was, people responded to it. The internet at its best is kind of self-correcting. It's not always at its best. But he said something. It started a conversation. It made him think. It made others think.
Well, I don't think it really – what I think it made him think about is – and I think this is quite common now on the right. So his article was a conservative article. It was that, in fact, the real victims are not the people who progressives think are the real victims, but in fact, white men not only can be victims, because obviously anybody of any demographic can be a victim, but that being a white man is a form of victimhood. And I think that that belief has only increased on the right and been sort of more specifically articulated on the right in the last year or a few months.
Let's take a phone call. Here's John in Homeville. You're on WNYC. Hi, John.
Hi. So I think my question or comment is I think the big problem with the word privilege is that it's very fungible, and the way it's being thrown around, it loses its value. Because if you ask somebody, for example, and this is very, very important with the last election, from, you know, the Midwest that has lost a well-paying job in, let's say, automobile manufacturing or in steel production and is now stocking shelves at Walmart, and saying that they have white privilege just because of the color of their skin, they're going to look at you and ask you, what are you talking about? So I think understanding an individual's personal history rather than looking at what race or ethnicity or whatever they belong to is important in this discussion. I think that often gets lost when we look at how it's discussed in the media and certainly also how it is discussed in the what I would call, you know, over-the-top repressive left in colleges.
John, thank you very much. And he mentioned the political campaign of last year, and you refer to how Clinton and Sanders in the Democratic primary were battling the privilege wars as you see it, yes?
Yes. So what I found there and what I found so fascinating and sometimes sort of inadvertently amusing was that Hillary Clinton's supporters and Bernie Sanders's supporters were constantly accusing one another of unchecked privilege. And in a sense that everybody was right. You could support Sanders. You could have supported Sanders because you didn't care about sexism. You could also have supported him for any number of other reasons. Similarly, you could have supported Clinton because you didn't care about economic redistribution as much as a Sanders supporter, or maybe you cared a lot about sexism. So everyone was right, but everybody was kind of talking past each other.
We'll continue in a minute with Phoebe Moss-Bovey, author of The Perils of Privilege, Why Injustice Can't Be Solved by Accusing Others of Advantage. We'll take more of your phone calls, and I'll ask her why she cites two very popular cultural icons, Lena Dunham and Louis C.K., as significant to this conversation. Stay with us. Brian Lehrer on WNYC with Phoebe Maltz-Bovey, author of The Perils of, quote, Privilege, Why Injustice Can't Be Solved by Accusing Others of Advantage. And what's Lena Dunham and Louis C.K.'s role in this ecosystem?
Well, so I'll begin with Lena Dunham. So basically, when Girls, for her HBO show, first appeared, she just very suddenly, every discussion about it was her privilege, Lena Dunham's privilege, often conflated with her protagonist, Hannah Horvath's privilege. And I'd never quite seen anything like it. Everything about the show and about her was about privilege. And this seemed curious to me just because she was hardly the first person with some family connections, maybe not even that many by those standards, more than I have, but certainly, but not unusual for entertainment. She didn't seem that well connected. She was hardly the first person to have a show about a white and somewhat oblivious group of friends. It seemed surprising that there was suddenly so much focus on her privilege. And I think two conversations came out of that, one productive and one not so productive. I think it was useful to have a discussion about who gets to have a show in the first place. And I think that that's an important conversation that should happen even more. I think the question of whether Lena Dunham personally has reckoned with her privilege was a bit silly. And then I think that what's interesting about her just in her career is that she's been able to use the fact that she is sort of, whether she wants to be or not, construed as the kind of the representative of millennial privileged oblivious, as she can play that character sometimes. And I think that's actually been really interesting to watch.
And Louis C.K.
I think is sort of a different situation, where he is a white man. As I understand it, he's a straight white man. He writes, and in an interview that I talk about in the book, he sort of discusses his background in a way that very sort of, because he's brilliant, he's able to sort of discuss the fact that I believe that his, just discuss how well-educated his family is in a way that when you read it, it seems as if he's describing a very scrappy childhood. And I think that the interview that I talk about in the book really shows that privilege is, if you're skillful, any childhood can be sort of coming from nothing.
Spun as coming from nothing.
Yes, yes.
Alexis in Philadelphia, you're on WNYC. Hi, Alexis.
Hi, Brian. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm actually really excited by this conversation. I agree with the author. I think that when that article came out in 2014 and people began a national discussion of privilege and white privilege, it sort of fueled the us versus them fire and gave power to people, whether they're white working class rural people or people such as the racial realist, to say, you know, how can we be accused of having all this privilege? Look at all of these special rights and special privileges, such as affirmative action, that minorities have gotten, you know, since the 1960s, and sort of gave them the power to turn the conversation around and say, we don't have all these special privileges. Look at all these other people who have special rules, you know, which of course were given to them to make up for a lack of, you know, economic and social power. But I agree with the idea that, you know, it furthered, that it gave them the power to argue back and sort
but,
of
but
fuel
if you,
the divide.
If you, and that helped fuel Trumpism.
Yes, exactly.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
And so how would either of you argue that people who want to fight the privilege, that if you accept the premise that white privilege still is the dominant privilege and that that needs to be addressed in society in a serious way, what's the alternative way to do it?
Shall I?
Oh, Alexis, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, I think right now we really need to look for what I call our bridge builders, the people who you know, white liberals, people who are liberal, but also, or maybe they're conservative, who maybe don't agree with what the social divide right now, who can maybe make connections, you know, between people on either side, who can help to have conversations.
Mm-hmm. Something less accusatory.
And exactly. And intersectionality that people are talking about with, you know, the feminist movement and the march and, you know, how historically the feminist movement was predominantly white, but now, you know, everyone needs to help, you know, whether you're white or Muslim mm-hmm. or black or Hispanic, you know, everyone needs to work together to keep this movement going forward.
More emphasis on that. Phoebe?
Well, I'm definitely in favor of fighting Trumpism. That's where I fall politically. I think that what the left needs to do is not just sort of agree with, sort of not nod along and sort of self-flagellate when hearing the sort of new populist rhetoric. So the discussions that Alexis was just mentioning, I think, really relate to really a strain in conservatism that started really with like Sarah Palin talking about real America. And this has been going on for ages. And I think what the left needs to do is build bridges where possible, but also criticize harshly where needed and not sort of assume that just because a lot of people are saying that a Trump supporter is the real victim, not to sort of inadvertently even nod along with that.
And Alexis, thank you for your call. And we're going to go to Michelle in Cape Cod. You're on WNYC. Michelle, hi.
Hello, Brian. Thank you for taking my call. Hello, Phoebe. I'm an African-American woman, and I don't agree with you, Phoebe. I believe that the word privilege is very important. And just in the context of history, because as a minority, one has to realize why they are not where perhaps they feel they could be or should be. By the way, I'm in my late 50s. And I believe it's very important for a minority to be able to define that reason for their position in this country. And, for example, we could use urban renewal, especially for New York City, back in the late 40s. And because of the color of one's skin, one's privilege, they got to move into areas where they could pay $5,000 for a house. Those same people are working in the same factories that the unprivileged, which are people being put in their place, meaning the minorities, get sent to what are called projects. We're talking about the same people making the mm-hmm. same amount of money.
So let me jump in because we're going to run out of time in 2 minutes for the show. Mm-hmm. Phoebe, engage with Michelle. I think Michelle exemplifies how for so many people the experience of, you know, of whites and males having privilege, the experience of it feels it yes. just feels very authentic.
So it's hard to get every nuance and every argument of a book through in a radio interview. But I actually agree with what Michelle said. I don't think we're in disagreement there. I think the concept of privilege, and I write this in the book also, is very useful for conceptualizing society. And I also discuss this in the book. I think it's most useful when people are using it to discuss their own experiences of oppression. And where I think it fails is when it's used by people who have privilege to sort of as a way of making an argument about something else or as a way of promoting themselves. I think as a description, it can be incredibly useful and powerful.
Michelle, thank you for your call. In our last 45 seconds or so, you grew up in New York City, I see.
Yes.
But you live in Toronto now.
In New York City this year, but normally in Toronto, yes.
Is this conversation any different in Canada?
I'm trying to figure that out. Yeah, I think people are in some ways more attuned to it, in other ways less.
And so we leave it there with Phoebe Maltz-Bovy, B-O-V-Y, author of the new book, The Perils of Privilege, Why Injustice Can't Be Solved by Accusing Others of Advantage. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Don't forget to tune in tonight at 8 o'clock for our national call-in show for the first 100 days of the Trump administration, Indivisible. Our Wednesday night host, Charlie Sykes, will have Wisconsin Senator Ron Johnson as his guest. And join me back here tomorrow on the Brian Lehrer Show. Mayor de Blasio will be with us, and Stephen Dubner from Freakonomics will invite you to call in and tell him something he doesn't know. Talk to you then.